This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Okay, you know. David, let's go. John has to leave and I've got to go get my hair done.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer and we are theater geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about theater, community theater, and the performing arts. And we are back together again after a something of a hiatus. Today's topic, we're going to be talking about flying blind. And that means not having any information other than the script with which to create a show. And that happens more often than we think, doesn't it? More often than maybe audiences are aware.
Well, I think it depends on the show, that's for sure. But, you know, Shakespeare, there's almost no kind of description of what you need to do. It's all inside the text.
Mm-hmm.
But then you need to be able to pull it apart. Maybe one of the reasons why a lot of people don't do Shakespeare, because if you don't know how to pull a piece of Shakespeare apart or a classic apart like that and find the information, it's difficult. But even a lot of modern plays and musicals now are coming to us from our rental houses or royalty houses with very little information in the script.
Right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the one that we just are doing, which is closing tonight, Drowsy Chaperone, came, and it's the first time I've ever seen that, John. There was nothing but dialogue.
Honestly,
in the script that we got. Usually there's at least some description of the set, what you need. There's a plot, a prop list. There's a costume list. There are some, even if they're minuscule, stage directions like enter stage left or exit stage right. There was nothing.
Wow.
Just the words.
Which is kind of exciting and kind of daunting. I mean, you know, like when I sit down to direct a show, for example, just a regular play, I often don't pay any attention to the stage directions anyway,
mm-hmm.
unless they seem to work for the set and what I'm doing. And then I'll just tell the actor at this point, go ahead and follow the stage directions. But I don't use it as a Bible, or as a map.
At least it's a base.
Yeah, but it's a base for something.
Yeah.
But when you're doing a brand new work that has literally no references in the script as to what something's supposed to look like, how something is supposed to be done, it does get to be a little daunting.
Yeah, especially, you know, with a show like this, it's not a one set, quote-unquote, show.
Right.
Things come in and go out and go up and go down and characters appear and then vanish, kind of. And you really have to figure out not only how that is going to work as far as staging goes, but with whatever set you have. And so you have to be very, very careful and very fortunate to have a really good and imaginative set designer. I'm mentioning no names,
okay.
John Shoup.
Well, clue me in. Okay, there's a gag in which characters emerge from a common household appliance. Is that in the
very
script?
Good.
No, well, it's not. Nothing's written in the script.
But
so,
you see, go.
Well, for us to, one of the things that we have done is that we just said, how do we find out more information?
Right.
We had seen the Tony Awards. We knew a little bit from the Tony Awards.
And the tour has come through
this
area.
The national tour came through. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to go see the national
mm-hmm.
tour.
And you took your video camera.
No. David,
that would be
not
that would be illegal.
No, it's not funny.
It's
a video boutonniere.
Okay. Never mind.
Crazy carnation.
And then I have to admit, before we started rehearsals, we did a lot of work with YouTube this time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because it had the number that they did on the Tony Awards.
Right.
Which is a big number in the show.
Right.
And it had at least clips of every other number, from the Broadway production, plus from the national tour, and then from various regional companies around the country that had produced it.
So
the point is you cannot take things right off. In other words, our choreographers looked at that. And then they came up with what they thought our people could do, because right. our people are not professional dancers, and put it on our small stage.
Right.
And it just, but they had to have some kind of a jumping off point, you know.
Right, right.
And it worked really well. And I know our props lady, because we were there going with her, went through everything on the script. And when it indicated that somebody needed a glass of water, she had to write that down. That's the way we picked out what kind of props are needed. Well, it says you have three reporters and three photographers. Well, the reporters need notebooks to write on. The photographers need cameras to flash.
Right.
But none of this, there's no prop list that says you need two reporters' notebooks and three cameras. Mm-hmm. You just have to go in there and get it out on your own.
So in a way, it's like Shakespeare. We yeah. still have to go back to the text.
Right. Right.
The text gives you the information that you need. A lot of times what we see when a script comes to us and that makes us feel more comfortable is that inside those scripts, the stage manager's notes have been placed inside the scripts for
right.
us.
Right.
So let's say we're doing You Can't Take It With You.
Right.
Well, what we get is a script that's based on the stage manager's script from the original production back in the 1930s.
Right.
So all those blocking movements, any props list, any set design, all that stuff was information that was delivered to the printing house from the stage manager's script.
Wow.
And that is what helps us to learn more about the show.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a script with that in it.
Oh,
sure. You have all stage directions that are written in the script.
Exit stage left.
Yeah.
Enter. Oh, that stuff. Yeah,
all that
right.
stuff is
yeah.
what the stage manager originally have written.
Okay. Oh, I see yes. that. Okay, yeah. so yeah. stage manager figures something.
And
some of
for this show, and I honestly, this is the first show that I've ever worked on where that was, that there was nothing
sure.
except the written word, you know.
Okay, but like, okay, now I look at like Arsenic and Old Lace. Okay, I've directed that a couple times. That script is pretty detailed because of because of all the doors and the windows and all that, and the window seat and all that junk.
Sure.
And the stage directions are pretty specific, and there's only like one or two ways you can build that set, and they're pretty similar to what the original show was anyway.
Right.
And is that stage manager directions in, you know, a lot of times
sure.
in that
yeah.
script?
Sure.
Okay, I didn't
and
realize
the, I think the problem is, it's not a problem, but with older shows like Arsenic and Old Lace, or You Can't Take It With You, or Life with Father, or any of those, they pretty much, that's the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that did it pretty much did it the same way, exits and entrances and doors and whatever was needed. But the newer shows uh-huh. are like, it's you're right, it's kind of like Shakespeare. You find out what you need by just kind of going through it in your head, and then you try and put it on your particular stage.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and in a way, it's daunting, but in another way, it's kind of exciting and
oh,
exhilarating.
Wow.
That's why I was just going to ask
every
that.
Time your energy you, level and every is time you moving. See something that works,
right.
you go, wow, that's wonderful.
And it's worked, and what's cool is when something works and it's something that you came up with that
right.
isn't
yeah.
something that came from, you know,
well, and that's
something else.
And that's what your production team is for then as well. And that's why having a good production team makes
yeah.
can also make or break a show. So it's not just about the set design. It's also about who works on the props, what ideas the director has for this scene, what
right.
ideas does the assistant director come up with as we're talking and running the show,
right.
you know, or running rehearsals.
Right.
So it becomes a collaborative process. I think that would be one of the reasons why it might be fun to do more original works sometimes too, because you have no concept
no limits.
Other than the one that's coming into your head at the time.
Right.
And maybe we're fooled.
It's a challenge.
Maybe
it
we're
really
fooled
is.
By some older scripts too, that where the directions are so precise. Like, I always thought, you know, okay, you kind of got to do it this way, you know. I mean, it seemed mm-hmm. well, it worked obviously for them, but the thing is that you know, like with Arsenic, you know, it's almost there's almost more direction, and Life with Father is worse. There's more direction than you really
well,
want
you have
or
all
need
those
in
kids
there.
Kids running around.
Well, I mean, I remember cuz I co-directed a production of that a number of years ago, and it's got stuff like, you know, took the napkin rings and put the napkins in and did this and took puff in the drawers and then went, then comes back and gets the spoons.
Yeah.
This is for like the maid's directions.
Well, you know, the show that's coming up that John is going to direct and which I directed years and years and years ago, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, that started off as a choral thing for a boys' school in England. And it's expanded and expanded and expanded, and pretty much it's up to the discretion of the director to set it in any time period he wants, or mix and match him if he wants to, or anything. Play the
there's
character.
No direction.
There's no direction.
There's no direction.
It's all up to the inventiveness of the director and the choreographers. And so, you know, I think there's more things out there now than there used to be, obviously.
Yeah. So, of course, too. If we've done a show that works, we will tend to repeat the same. When we bring it back 10, 11 years later,
a lot of times,
whenever it is, a lot of times we will, you know, we go back to our original production,
sure,
and so
do.
That's our guidepost.
Well, we can say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You
right?
Know?
Yeah.
Mean, if it worked well, then it's going to probably work well again.
Right.
If you get a good cast.
Yeah, and we make changes. I mean, and then there were none, which used to be 10 Little Indians. It was essentially the same, almost the same blocking, even, and yet. You know, you find things, let's not do that again.
I was going to say, the show had a completely different flavor the 12 years ago as opposed to this year when we produced it.
But see, now, how many ways can you do Oklahoma? There's another thing where there probably are not a lot of stage directions written.
I don't know, though. I mean, I could see, Lori coming out with the Martian headset on.
God. Then that's the trap, is you get too far away from the basic thought.
Right,
you know?
Right. And what about, let's go back. You were talking about Shakespeare. Can you get ridiculous with Shakespeare? I mean, can you actually, you get so far away from period? First, the language is archaic to start with. Okay, so it almost doesn't matter what period you put it in, because the audience kind of has to go with it no matter what, right?
Well, they have to go with the dialogue.
That's right.
You're not going to change Shakespeare. Hopefully.
No. And part of the fun, of course, is seeing, they're doing it a new way. I mean, that's part of what the audience is interested in. But can you kind of lose your way?
Oh, well, sure you can.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've seen a number of productions, even at somewhere as famous as the Stratford Shakespeare Festival, that I think they really maybe
missed the mark.
Yeah. They went a little off the deep end. You know? So. And maybe that's a topic all onto itself at some point, you know. But I think there are a number of times people have really missed the mark when there's nothing there, and then they go, "Well, let's conceptualize." And there were too many drinks flowing that night.
So, and we're going to do another episode on kind of the scalability of shows here. But one of the things that occurs to me too is that you even if you have a lot of direction, then you always have to take a show and fit it to your own theater, obviously. And sometimes even if you've got a buttload of stage direction in the script, it's not going to work.
Right.
And you'd like it to work. And I don't know, sometimes that's a clue as to whether or not you should be doing the show at all or not, right?
That's true. But I always say, don't let the size limitations of your stage limit what you think you can do.
Oh, good Lord. If we did that, we'd be doing like 3-character shows all the time.
That's right. Oh, yeah. True. Yeah, we would.
You know, and there is a reverse to this as well. Shows like Crazy for You and Fiddler on the Roof, they expect you to do their choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes in a notated book. And that book not only comes with that, but it comes with other staging information, because they want their shows to look as much like the original production as it possibly can. So,
and ours pretty much have.
That's right.
So they have to. There's no.
How big a difference does the cast make? I mean, in terms, I'm not talking about the final performance, but when you have a show with very little direction that comes to you with not a whole lot to go on, obviously your production staff is really involved, because you're dealing with the sets and concepts and things like that. How much then, once it's actually in the cast's hands, I mean, I'm talking about during the rehearsal process, how much effect do they have on whether or not it's going to work or not? I mean, do you learn more? How much do you adjust with a show that has no directions anyway?
Well, I think the cast... Oh, that's... Excuse me. I think the cast has a lot to do with it because they, thank you, John. They go with it, you know, and you can sit and watch them, give them some stage directions, and then they kind of take off on their own. And if they go too far, then you just kind of bring them back a little bit.
Kind of depends on how much time you've got for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, too, well, yeah. Yes. And fortunately, in this show, particularly that the Drowsy Chaperone, it's 90% music and dance. So honest to God, I had the easiest job in the world. All I had to really do was cast it properly and get good people to head up all the production crews. And then I just sat back and watched and enjoyed it.
Well, we always say, I mean, casting is ultra important in every case.
Oh,
but it's maybe ultra important, especially when you're dealing with something where you've got other issues such as coming up with the whole concept.
Oh, for sure. And giving your cast the ability to play with a show like that so that if they are working on stage and they say, you know what, wouldn't it be funny if I had a different hat here?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden for the costumer, it becomes about, oh, they want a hat. Well, why don't we give a different hat to that character every time they walk on stage? Maybe that hat gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I did a production one time with the last tech director, Frank Brush. And Frank directed a production of The Mikado. And he had this concept, and he just wanted us to use fans all the way through the show. And the next thing we knew,
it was Japanese. I'm
saying, it was Japanese.
It was not a burlesque show. Japanese.
They became phallic symbols almost. And every time these two characters walk on stage, they kept bringing larger and larger fans on stage.
Size matters kind of thing.
Until finally the one who wins is the one with the biggest fan. You know? But it was something that came out of a rehearsal process. That can be exciting.
But you know what? But that wouldn't work if you didn't have the people to carry it off. And I'm not talking about being able to lift the heavy fan. I'm talking about being able to deal with the comedy in a way that doesn't like smack the audience in the face, but yet is obvious. You know, the good acting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And timing, especially if you're doing comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's essential. Yeah. We have one scene in this show that the man in the chair says, I hate this scene. And I go, I'm right with you, fella, when we first started it.
Yeah.
And it's a scene that not only gets a huge laugh at that scene, but then later on, it's a setup for one thing that just brings down the house.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you know what's going to work? And even if you don't like it, you have to trust other people. It's like the Oriental scene, which lasts about 2.5 minutes. And I said, why are we wasting costumes and a whole drop to do this little piddly thing? We don't need to do it. And my friend Mr. Shop said, trust me, I think it's going to work. Well, it's one of the funniest things in the show.
Right.
And I'm going, I can't believe this. I still can't believe it.
I often go back to saying, trust the author, because they left it in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A show goes through so many changes when it's being created that we get the final version usually, or something
close to
the final version. Sometimes it changes even after Broadway. But if it worked on Broadway, we're pretty much assured it's going to work for us, unless it's a subject matter that we think our audiences won't necessarily find tasteful.
Yeah, so. That was the sort of thing. Again, you had to invent that scene because you didn't really have, other than the text, you had nothing else to work with.
No.
And of course you had, you have the actors to carry it off. Right. That made it certain.
And the costumer, the scenic artist, the set designer, the director, the choreographers, then they all work together to make that scene work.
Sometimes it's like, what do they say? The stars are in alignment. And I think for this particular show, they were.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Did well.
Yep. We're not really bragging.
We are bragging. Well, I'm bragging a lot.
She's bragging. I will brag on Marsha because it was it was a marvelous show. And had the pacing been off a nanosecond, it would not have worked.
I have seen a production of it where the pacing was off a nanosecond.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Or five.
Yeah. But back to our topic here, other than congratulations here.
Okay.
The I guess the thing is, don't be afraid of a minimal script that doesn't give you a lot of the stage direction, because that gives you opportunities to grow you know, as a theater.
As a theater, as a director, as a choreographer, mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. everything. But it does mean that you have to do a lot more research.
Yeah.
You have to do a lot more delving into the text.
Right.
So that you know what is coming up, and then just, I mean, we're supposed to be creative people, right?
Right.
We're
That's what it says. We're theater geeks.
We're theater geeks.
So yeah, I mean, and then use our creative bones and try and figure it out.
Right.
Okay, well, that wraps it up for this episode of Theater Geeks. We will see you next time. Be sure to stop by the website.
I was going to ask if we're still selling mugs.
We're still selling mugs, hats. I think there are is underwear. There is underwear on the website now, Theater Geek underwear.
Are you kidding?
No, I am not kidding, Marcia. We finally did it.
Okay.
Finally did it. John kept asking, so it's there. And so so stop by there. Also, follow us on Facebook. We do tweet out on Twitter once in a while. And there are, anyway, there's a lot of good stuff on the website. If you sign up for for our mailing list, we also, on occasion, send out kind of a newsy thing with just sort of, you know, miscellaneous clips about the theater world in general. If you'd like to get that, sign up at theatergeeks.com. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
19 minutes and 16 seconds.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by musicalley.com.